لله والحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم. اللهم أعنا على ذكرك وشكرك وحسن عبادتك، اللهم علمنا ما ينفعنا وانفعنا بما علمتنا وزدنا علما رب العالمين. أما بعد، we started last time talking about that portion of Ibn al-Qayyim's advice when he was saying, rahimahullah, of how the shaitan will try to assault the heart by reconciling with an-nafsul ammara, the part of the soul or the soul that commands evil, that seeks it and wants it, in opposition to an-nafsul mutma'inna, that soul or that portion of the soul that is contented, that is assured, that loves Allah Azza wa Jalla and wants to please Him. So this soul, right, if this was not clear last time, that an-nafsul mutma'inna and al-lawama and then al-ammara, these are descriptions of the same soul but in different states and conditions. Or when you kind of listen to Ibn al-Qayyim rahimahullah is talking about, they could also be referring to a potential or a part of the soul that is fighting with other parts as well. So when you look at an-nafsul mutma'inna as a station, as a condition, then one would migrate from one to the other. So a soul could be ammara bis-su', it commands evil, it loves evil, it seeks it. It's comforted when it finds it, and it's dissatisfied when it misses it. So it's kind of, it's baked with evil, it allowed itself to be immersed in evil. So it runs after it. And if it forgets it, if it misses it, the soul itself or the nafs itself says, how about more of this? How about more of this? We miss it. We want it. And if it doesn't really stop at a particular limit, once you reach that limit, it tells you, I want more of this. Right? So there is no stop to that evil or to that temptation. I want more and more and more of it. So it continuously commands you to do evil. So that's one station. If a person's iman increases and his proximity to Allah Azza wa Jalla increases, he comes closer and closer to Allah, so he migrates then from an-nafsul ammara all the way to an-nafsul mutma'inna, the one that is contented, the one that is assured, the one that is at peace, as we said last time. Tayyib, why is it described as mutma'inna? And itma'inan is to be at peace with, comfortable with. Why is it described as mutma'inna? So it is mutma'inna bima'na annaha tma'annat ila Allah Azza wa Jal. It is comforted by Allah and with Allah. It's comfortable with Allah's decrees and I'm comfortable with Allah's commands. So it's not fighting them and it's not resisting them. So it's at peace. So when it comes to Allah's decrees, it understands, and it doesn't understand just by claiming that it understands or by theoretically knowing that it should know. There's something that's a level higher. Because you can know that something is right, but not feel it. Right? You know that it's right, but you don't follow it. That's not what al-mutma'inna is. Al-mutma'inna knows, but it doesn't just simply know. It feels it. It follows it. So it knows that Allah's decrees, whatever He had decided, is better than its own choices. So it surrenders and submits to Allah Azza wa Jalla in its decrees. It can change whatever Allah allows it to change, but submits to the rest. And by that, it receives assurance from Allah Azza wa Jalla and comfort. So it's not fighting Allah in His decrees. Whatever Allah decides, that's for me. So it's at peace. It's comfortable. And it goes with Allah Azza wa Jal's decisions, because Allah's decisions, it believes, is the best for it. So it adjusts itself to Allah's decrees, does not want Allah's decrees to adjust to it. You see the difference between them? That it adjusts itself to Allah's decree. So, Ya Allah, you didn't give me this, but you gave me that. So instead of feeling sorry for what I do not have, you invest in what you have. You follow the path that Allah opened, not cry over the path that Allah closed. You understand the difference between the two? Allah did not give you this. Fine. If you are comfortable with Allah, pleased with Him, you see, Allah did this for a reason, for a wisdom, that sometimes I may realize and many times I may not. But Allah gave this instead. So you're not blind to what Allah had given, to the opportunities that are there, if you just choose to praise and glorify and thank Allah Azza wa Jal for even the little that He had given you. And the little, if blessed, it's a lot. So it's comfortable with Allah's decrees, so it's at peace. But it's also comfortable with Allah's sharia, Allah's commands, Allah's revelation. It doesn't resist it. So something is hard, it doesn't fight Allah over why this and why not that. Explain to me why this and why not that. So its mind and its heart surrenders to Allah, so it finds peace with His sharia, peace with His commands, peace with His worship, peace with His decisions and decrees. And it goes with whatever Allah wants it to do, so it is pleasing to Allah, so Allah pleases it. Right? And that formula is important. It pleases Allah, so Allah pleases it. And Allah is pleased with it. Otherwise, as they've said, how do you want Allah to be pleased with you and you are not pleased with Him? And He's the wise and you are the foolish. Right? How could it be that you want Allah to be happy with you, with all of your flaws, with all of your mistakes, yet you want Allah to welcome you and receive you, but you're not willing to be happy with Allah? So Al-Mutma'inna understands this. Says, I cannot bring a better choice than Allah's choice. So why fight Him? Why are you fighting Him? And I cannot have a better guide than Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam. So why are you fighting Him? And why do you put somebody else's thought and philosophy and lifestyle before Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam? Why would you do this? Because your belief would contradict that choice. So why are you doing this? So if you do this, there is no itmi'nan. You're not comfortable. You're always agitated. You're always resisting. And that will demote you from al-mutma'inna into one that is lawama. You do a mistake and then you blame yourself. You blame yourself for the good that you have done or the evil that you have done. So you're not really comfortable. And it could be demoted even further into a nafs that commands the person to do evil. So what Ibn al-Qayyim rahimahullah is saying here, you have in you, other than these stations that we talked about, you have within you the potential. You have within you a nafs that commands evil. And you have within you also a nafs that is comfortable with Allah Azza wa Jal. So the potential for this is there, and the potential for that is there, and you can strengthen this against that or that against this. And you feel it sometimes, right? So sometimes you find yourself attracted to more evil, wanting to see more evil, wanting to be around more evil. That is an-nafs, that is al-ammara. Now it's dominant. And sometimes you find yourself no comfortable seeking what pleases Allah Azza wa Jal. So you find yourself, I want to go to the masjid. I do want to read Quran. I want to listen to this lecture. I want to do good. I want to give sadaqah. And when you do it, you feel comfortable. You feel satisfied. Oh, alhamdulillah. It was just nagging me for a long time that I wasn't on this path, that I wasn't praying, that I wasn't on the straight path. It was disturbing me. Now that I've done it, and you must have felt this. You must have felt this. That once you do it, once kind of you read the Quran after a while of not reading it, you be comfortable with it. Say, alhamdulillah, look, I'm back, I've read it, you feel satisfied. Or you pray on time after missing the salah for a while, and you feel satisfied. Where did this satisfaction come from? That's a glimpse, a portion of at-tuma'nina, that comfort. You got it. We may not be at the level where we are mostly comfortable, assured, contented. We may not be yet, but Allah gives you taste. And you allow yourself to taste it. Perhaps the sweetness of what you taste motivates you to seek more of it, because this is the feeling that you want to have. But the shaitan, as Ibn al-Qayyim rahimahullah wrote, he's not going to let you do this. He knows the potential for this and the potential for that. So when he says that, your greatest ally is this an-nafsul ammara, the one that commands evil. So he says, so support it and seek its support. It is one of your greatest soldiers. And you can wage the greatest battle against the assured, contented self with an-nafsul ammara. Use this person against himself, because he will listen to you. Use him against him, because he has this flaw in him. So, قال فإذا انقطعت موادها وقويت النفس الأمارة, says when this النفس الأمارة is strong, and you keep supplying it with things that strengthen it, it will defeat النفس المطمئنة. Then it will take over the heart, will command it to do whatever it wants, and the heart will follow. And it will be your ally. مَعَ أَنَّهَا لَا تُخَالِفُكُمْ فِي شَيْءٍ الْبَتَّةِ. Here, it will never oppose you. Whatever you suggest to it, it will do. So if a person had been conquered by النفس الأمارة, he is open to all evil. Right? Is there a limit? No. And one evil breeds another. And you think that humanity has a limit, and then humanity surprises you. Humans surprise you. Then no, they'll cross this limit, and then the next, and then the next, and then the next. And you will kill one person, then you will kill 10, and then you will kill 100, then killing a million. This doesn't sound like such a bad thing. It can easily be done. And it doesn't disturb you. Like a person with a life conscience and with the iman, if you mistakenly kill an animal, it will disturb you. Right? Undeservedly, mistakenly, you kill an animal, it disturbs you. For others, they can kill hundreds of people and it doesn't. So how does this take place? And what corrupted the self so much? It gradually got contaminated, and the shaitan took over. And you have to believe that the shaitan is dominant there. Otherwise, what's the explanation, right, for this? قَالَ فَإِذَا أَحْسَسْتُمْ مِنَ الْقَلْبِ مُنَازَعَتَهُ إِلَى مَمْلَكَتِهِ. He says, if you dominate the heart, and you dominate the self, but now you feel that the heart is not really comfortable with this, and it wants to go back to what it remembers to be that comfortable state of being with Allah Azza wa Jal, it's not happy. The shaitan is not gonna let that happen. So he says what? He says, if you feel that he is being agitated and it isn't like that state of sin that he is in, there's still some life in it, and you want to be safe from that, قَالَ فَعَقِدُوا وَبَيْنَهُ وَبَيْنَ النَّفْسِ وَعُقْعَقْدَ النِّكَاحِ. He says, let the heart marry the self. And he means by that self that is tempted or that is attracted to the dunya. Let the heart marry that type of self. And tell the heart, beautify that bride, he says, in his eyes. And here they will tell him, taste the sweetness of that union between you and a self that enjoys this world, or if you want to skip the self, taste that beautiful union between you and this world. Compare this to the bitterness of the war between you and the world. Because as a heart that is alive, in order for you to be close to Allah Azza wa Jalla, you have to fight temptations, right? Constantly. And is that easy? No, it isn't easy. It is bitter. And sometimes you win, and sometimes you're injured, and sometimes you're defeated, and you blame yourself for it, and you try again. So it's an uncomfortable type of existence. It's a battle. Battle is not attractive. So he's saying, remember the battle that you used to wage with this world and its temptations and the devils and his helpers. Remember how hard it is. Remember how bitter all of that is. Compare this to how sweet life in this world is. If you just let it take whatever it wants. If you open the doors of temptations for it. Isn't this nicer? Do you have to be angry all the time, bitter all the time, on edge all the time? Just kind of let loose and be happy. Right? He says, he tells him that. And between the two, a self that is tired will choose what? The world. Right? This is of course, that's easier. So what is it that you want to do? Do you want to like go to the masjid and hear about all the wrong things that people do and all the things that you're supposed to do but you're not doing, and then you try to push yourself? Do you want to do this, or you just want to go out and have fun? And when you have fun, you'll be happy. And you're going to get let loose and unburden yourself and forget. And subhanAllah, so that the shaitan will convince you to do this, he will sweeten that experience for you. He will not disturb it. He'll make it easy and fun and nice. He may even protect you from any harm and discomfort, so that when you go out into this polluted world, you will love it. Well, why not? I went out, I had fun with these friends, I stayed up, I drank this, I ate that. This person is interesting, that place is interesting, I want to repeat this again and again and again and again. Compare this to sitting and reading a book about Islam, sitting and reading the Quran. That's not as much fun. That's not very attractive. So he wants to promote what is appealing to the soul, what is light. Remember before we said that falsehood is very light and beloved to the soul, whereas the truth is heavy. So nobody wants to live a life where it's heavy, where he has to take responsibility, has to sit and read and think and plan for the future. No, live for the moment. So he convinces to do this. And he'll tell him that war with shaitan, that war with this world, will rage on for years and years and decades, but if you enjoy yourself, you're not missing out and you don't have to suffer. So if a person believes it, by the way, this is why some people may ask, and I don't know if we brought this up before or not, why is it that the disbelievers or the sinners, let's say, it does not even have to be a disbeliever, why is it that the sinner seems to be happier than the faithful? Right? Why is it that the sinners seem to be happier than the faithful? And the first thing is, of course, you have to understand what the faithful are facing and what the sinful are not. So anyone who is faithful, what is he facing? What is he battling? You're fighting something. What are you fighting? You're fighting the shaitan. Constantly. And the helpers of the shaitan constantly. And you're fighting yourself. And you're trying to change yourself and change society. That's not a simple undertaking. Whereas this person who is a sinner, what type of life is he living? Does he want to change anything? No, he's being changed. He does not change anything. He's being changed. He's being molded. Shaitan doesn't bother him because he listens to him. Shaitan guides him. So of course he's not fighting. So that's the first point to keep in mind, why a sinner may look like, an underline may look like, that he's having more fun. Because he's not fighting. Whereas the faithful is. Right? And even if you kind of exit the religious comparison between the religious and the non-religious, or the religious, the faithful, and the sinners, move out of that comparison, that contrast, and compare two types of people. Someone who understands fully the society that they're living in. I'm speaking in worldly terms, not religious terms. Someone who understands fully the society that they are living in and its flaws, and they want to change it. Okay? And they could be philosophers, they could be activists, they could be academics. Versus someone who lives a very superficial life. The only thing that they're interested in is what movies they're going to see, what things that they're going to buy, the places that they're going to travel to. Which of the two is going to be quote unquote happier? The first or the second? The second. So the one who has deep thoughts and perceptions about this world, again, not even in religious terms, that philosopher, that academic, that activist, that historian, if you meet him, they'll be angry most of the time. Because it's serious. Everything that they see is serious. And they understand that it's an incredible undertaking to try to change this. Right? So that's the first point to keep in mind. That if you are serious, if you are intelligent, if you know the reality of this world, you're not going to be as happy with it as a superficial person is. Because if you are really smart, okay, and I hope that Muslims are smart, I hope. But if you're perceptive and smart, everything that they present to you that is supposed to make you happy, you can see beyond the curtain and it was going to make you very sad. The Olympics will not make you happy. In fact, if you dissect what you're seeing, it's going to make you incredibly sad. But if you're very superficial, it can entertain you. But if you can see beyond, a movie will not make you happy. A song will not make you happy because you see the manipulation behind it. So if you're smart, if you deconstruct it, if you understand the harm that it's doing, if you understand who's behind it, if you understand the messages that are in it, if you're that smart, none of these things can make you happy. But if you're a superficial person who is just incredibly attracted to images, they just put, you know, people jumping in front of him and that's enough for him to laugh, you'll be happy. That's the first thing of why a sinner may seem like that they are happier. But there's another thing. Do you think a sinner is actually happy? Or is just a matter of advertisement? The way that they advertise themselves, especially on social media, or people advertise them, or the shaitan beautifies that in your eyes. Do you think they're really happy? A person who is really happy could be alcoholic or a drug addict. Can they? Or gets divorced. Or. So it's not happiness. It's not happiness. Right? But it's an advertisement of what happiness is. And the person who is truly, truly happy is the one who is close to Allah Azza wa Jal. Because He is the one who makes, وَأَنَّهُ هُوَ أَضْحَكَ وَأَبْكَى. He is the one who makes people laugh or cry. Happiness is from Him subhanahu wa ta'ala. So that is the person who is going to be happy. That's the person who is going to be contented. And Ibn al-Qayyim rahimahullah, he says, وَاسْتَعِينُ يَا بُنَيَّ بِجُنْدَيْنِ عَظِيمَيْنِ. He's speaking here on the tongue of the devil, where he says, seek the assistance of two contingents of soldiers against this person. The contingent of this, or the soldiers of ghafla, inattentiveness and heedlessness, and that of temptation. So he's saying about ghafla, he says, block the hearts of the children of Adam from Allah Azza wa Jal and the last day, in whatever possible way. There's nothing that will help you achieve your goals better than that. Because if the heart is distant from Allah Azza wa Jal, he's inattentive, you can tempt it. And then he says, and then the soldiers of temptations, beautify that in their hearts and in their eyes. And he says, and assault them with these two types of soldiers. There's nothing that will help you more than that. And then he says, وَاسْتَعِينُوا عَلَى الْغَفْلَةِ بِالشَّهَوَاتِ وَعَلَى الشَّهَوَاتِ بِالْغَفْلَةِ. Seek the assistance of inattentiveness or ghafla to tempt him. And seek the assistance of temptations to make him heedless and inattentive. And here Ibn Qayyim, rahimahullah, is telling you that these two things, they feed each other. So the shaitan can reach you. And by the way, when you're reading Ibn al-Qayyim, Ibn al-Qayyim is giving you patterns and categories and things that are common among humanity. So you can take this fact and apply it to everyone that you see, including yourself. This is a strategy, he's telling you. This is a strategy. So he's saying, ghafla to shahwa and shahwa to ghafla. Heedlessness to temptation, temptation to heedlessness. They strengthen each other. So he says, for some people, you will enter through shahwa. For some people, you'll enter through ghafla. But once you go get into one, you have the next one. How do they lead to each other? Because if he can distance you from Allah Azza wa Jal, so you're not as close, could he not tempt you then? That makes sense, right? So he takes you away from Allah, you don't have that strong connection, now he can convince you to sin, right? This is right. So he'll try to do that. Put obstacles between you and Allah so that you don't remember him. So less masjid, less Quran, less dhikr, less dua, less this and that. And he's not going to ask you, by the way, to sin in order to do this. He'll simply suggest greater distractions. Just watch this video before you go and read the Quran. Why don't you? On one video, brings another, and then brings another. And then this half hour that you're supposed to have invested in reading the Quran is gone. You don't know where it went, but it's just gone. Instead of going to the masjid, he'll tell you, why don't you just do this? Fix this. Halal, by the way. He's not going to suggest haram. But what is he doing? He's putting what? Obstacles. Why don't you stay up a little bit? Talk to so-and-so. You haven't talked to him for a long time. It's like he really cares about you, right? Or about them. But I haven't talked to him for a long time. It'd really be fun to catch up. You do it. But he knows what? You stay up, what happens? You're not going to wake up for Fajr. So it's just halal, just blocks. And he knows. And if you actually, you're smart enough to notice, if you just actually pay attention, you'll know, okay, I'm being manipulated right now. So if you have a priority, you'll say no to this. He says, no, by 11, by 12, I need to be asleep. Otherwise, I can't wake up for Fajr. Done. I'm not going to do anything else. So if you said that for yourself, he knows, okay, I can't tamper with this. So I had to try something else. So he'll try this ghafla. Now, when you're distant, now he can introduce sin. Otherwise, it's difficult for him because maybe you're strong. So he'll weaken you. Or the other way around, right? He knows that this is your weakness, this sin is weakness. So he goes from that door. He'll convince you to do it. When you do it, you're further removed from Allah Azza wa Jal. So that causes ghafla. So you have to understand, right? If you lose a battle, how you lost it. This is how you become a good general. And you are the general of your life, right? You're that commander. So you have to understand, he defeated me here. Okay, analyze it, how? So you can counter. Next time he tries the very same tactic with the very same advice, How do I reply? And then you will know how the shaitan is advancing and how you can repel him. So he says, وَصُولُوا عَلَيْهِمْ بِهَذَيْنِ الْعَسْكَرِينَ. So he says, he used to these things with them. And he says, وَقْرِنُوا بَيْنَ الْغَافِلَيْنِ. So he's also, there's a third tactic, right? And that other tactic is what? Bring two inattentive, heedless people together. وَقْرِنُوا بَيْنَهُمَا. Make them friends, make them companions. And then use them, those two, against الذاكر, the one who remembers Allah. Right? So now he's using humans. قَالَ وَلَا يَغْلِبُ وَاحِدٌ خَمْسَةً. He says, one will not defeat five. Right? One will not defeat five. Because he said, I brought two, and these are foolish, in the hands of the devil. And they have their devils, that makes them four. And he has his devil, the faithful. So these are five against one. So if you bring those five against him, you'll be able to achieve something. قَالَ وَإِذَا رَأَيْتُمْ جَمَاعَةً مُجْتَمِعِينَ عَلَى مَا يَضُرُّكُمْ. And he says, if you see a group that have gone congregated, that are, you know, sitting together, doing something that harms you, whether it's remembering Allah or His commands or His prohibitions or His religion, and you cannot separate them on your own, you cannot separate them, what do you do? فَاسْتَعِينُوا عَلَيْهِمْ بِبَنِي جِنْسِهِمْ مِنَ الْإِنْسِ الْبَطَّالِينَ. So seek against them other humans who are idlers, foolish, they do nothing, they waste their time. It says seek their assistance, right? فَقَرِّبُوهُمْ مِنْهُمْ وَشَوِّشُوا عَلَيْهِمْ بِهِمْ. He says, bring those closer to them and distract them with them. So he says here, use people against people. Right? So, if you know that somebody is good, and your tactics on their own are insufficient, bring other humans to help him. Those who may have been old friends, or those who are acquaintances, and they say, oh, so-and-so, why don't you come out with us? Because the temptations of the shaitan, the whispers that the person hears in himself are insufficient now. Now he needs more. So it's those people who will come and say, why don't you come out with us? Why don't you come out and watch this? Come on, didn't you have enough of this and that? Especially difficult when a person has just started to commit himself to Islam and is trying to shake off all the bad habits. So why don't you play some games with us? We're going to go here, we're going to go there. And then what you long for, you miss, you still remember. Even if it had been a year or two, you still remember the fun that you used to have. And you say to yourself, maybe I can try it. What's the harm? Maybe. And if they keep persisting and you keep getting weaker and weaker, they'll drag you. So this is using humans against humans. And these humans may not know that they're being used in that way. But you have to realize it. You have to realize it when a human is being used that way. You don't have to call them, oh, you're the devil. You're the brother of the devil. But realize that it's a tactic. So rebuff them. No, I don't want to do this. Because you understand what that is? Taking you, or supposed to take you. So you say no. And if not, he says, if you see a group doing something that pleases Allah, first try to separate them. Right? If you can try to whisper to some bad thoughts about the other, sow between them seeds of hatred, friction. Why is it always that you need to do this? Why do we always listen to you? If you can use their egos against each other, a misunderstanding, if you can let this person backbite the other, and then someone will tell him about it, whatever you can use, especially if a person is flawed and has not dealt with those flaws, then use it to break him apart. So if you're going to come together, by the way, remember this, if you're going to come together to please Allah Azza wa Jal as a group, don't think that the shaitan is going to let you do it easily and succeed. He'll attack you. And he'll attack you internally in the sense of, he'll try to turn you against each other. And here is where the faithful, those who have iman, but those who have wisdom and those who have good manners will prevail. Because they'll understand what the shaitan is trying to do, and then with their good manners, they'll defeat him. Right? And we're not going to have time to go through this, but with their good manners, they will understand when they've done a mistake and they'll apologize. They'll understand when it's better to reconcile with the brother than to follow their own ego. They'll understand that the benefit of the group supersedes your own individual ambitions, so on and so on and so on. And their own taqwa will protect them from the plots of the shaitan. So if that doesn't happen, he'll send other humans against you. Right? He'll send other humans against you. And he said here, وَبِالْجُمْلَةِ فَأَعِدُّوا لِلْأُمُورِ أَقْرَانَهَا وَادْخُلُوا عَلَى كُلِّ وَاحِدٍ بَنِي آدَمَ مِنْ بَابِ إِرَادَتِهِ وَشَهْوَتِهِ. He says, in general, prepare for anything that you want to do, things that match it, are of its own nature. Things that make it easy for you to destroy it. So that, again, Ibn al-Qayyim is telling you, they strategize. You want to break this? Break it through using one or two or three, because these are the most likely things to break this thing. This is the most effective way. Min أَقْرَانِهَا. You want to assault a human being, assault him with another human being like him. A relative, a close friend, someone who knows him. Get that person in. So anything of the nature of what you want to destroy, use against them. Then you will destroy it. And he says, and assault the children of Adam, each one of them, from that point that he likes and from his desire. So the shaitan also has an assessment. I'm not saying this to terrify you to the extent that you think, wow, I am so defenseless. No. But I'm telling you to try to understand that there is an understanding of your nature. The shaitan understands your nature. By the way, it's not very difficult. Kind of your parents, right? They kind of know you, right? Right? Kind of know you. Okay, this is what he likes. This is what she dislikes. This is, you can push him this way, but you cannot push him that way. A person who spends some time around you will understand you. They'll know how to talk to you, how not to talk to you. The shaitan has always been with you, and also he has access to you that no other human being asks, because he can enter the body, right? And he can see the flow of blood. He knows when you're angry, when you're happy, when you're attracted to something. He knows that. So he knows the type of personality that he is dealing with. So better you also understand your own personality. So he will understand if you are impulsive or hesitant. Yani Ibn Qayyim elsewhere, he talks about it. Every person has this impulsive force and kind of hesitant force, right? The gas and the brake. And some people are very impulsive, right? And some people are very hesitant. They have to think about things, maybe even overthink. And some people, they don't have time to think. They just want to do it now. So now he knows which one of the two you are, and he'll push you. If you are impulsive, to make you way too impulsive. And if you're hesitant, to make you way too hesitant. Right? So you'll know where to push. And again, it's important for a person to understand themselves. Right? You know how we always look at other people and we try to know them and understand, but we don't understand ourselves. It's really important to understand yourself, because if you understand yourself, you'll understand what you like and how the shaitan is trying to use it against you. And he says, وَإِذَا كَانَ اللَّهُ قَدْ أَمَرَهُمْ أَنْ يَصْبِرُوا لَكُمْ. He says, and if Allah Azza wa Jalla had commanded humanity that they would be patient against you, and to be more patient than you, and to be stationed on those outposts, to watch for your advances, so you too also be patient with them and be more patient with them, and also occupy those stations so that you will defeat them. And now Ibn al-Qayyim is going to present another kind of strategy, and another common way where the shaitan is able to attack the children of Adam. And he says, وَانْتَهِسُوا فُرَصَكُمْ فِيهِمْ عِنْدَ الشَّهْوَةِ وَالْغَضَبِ. He says, take advantage of the time when they are tempted to do something. They desire it. So that's the desire, the pull, or they're angry. So take advantage and try to manipulate and control them when they are lustful and when they're angry. So he's saying you will not be able to catch the children of Adam with a net better than this. So he says, wa'lamu. So here's how Ibn al-Qayyim is talking about human nature, right? He says, wa'lamu anna minhum, so know that among them, he will have greater weakness among temptations. Sultanu shahwati alayhi aghlab. He is weaker among temptations, or temptations have greater power over him. وَسُلْطَانُ غَضَبِهِ ضَعِيفٌ مَقْهُورٌ. But his anger is not dominant. So he is weak when it comes to some temptations, but he controls his anger. You know people like that? Yeah? He doesn't get very angry, can control it, but when it comes to certain temptations, he cannot. قَالَ فَخُذُوا عَلَيْهِ طَرِيقَ الشَّهْوَةِ وَدَعُوا طَرِيقَ الْغَضَبِ. He says, then attack him from the desire path, let go of the anger path. Because that's not going to get you anywhere, right? He says, you know his weakness, that temptation, go in from there. Don't bother with anger, because he has control over it. And he says, وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ يَكُونُ سُلْطَانُ الْغَضَبِ عَلَيْهِ أَغْلَبِ. But among them, his anger is dominant. He has no power over his anger. But when he gets angry, he can do anything. So he says, then use that, but also don't vacate the path of desire and lust from his heart. Because the one who fails to control himself when he's angry will not be able to control himself when he is lustful and filled with desire. So you say, if he cannot control himself when he's angry, don't give up on desire. He will also follow it. Because the thing here is what? This weakness indicates another weakness as well, right? قَالَ فَزَوِّجُوا بَيْنَ غَضَبِهِ وَشَهْوَتِهِ وَمْزِجُوا أَحَدَهُمَا بِالْآخَرِ. So then marry or pair anger with desire and mix them with each other and invite them to his desire from the path of anger and to anger from the path of desire. That is, make him, when he's angry, he desires something, he wants to do something, but it's what? Still under control. There are barriers. He says, make him angry enough, because he's weak with his anger. Make him angry enough that when he's that angry, he'll break that barrier. He lost control now. All right? So whatever it is, like, okay. He's thinking about alcohol. Thinking about drugs. Thinking about this, whatever haram it is. Thinking about it. But under control. Make him angry enough that he'll say, you know what, I'm going to do it. He'll be so angry, he'll leave the house, she'll leave the house, and they'll do something stupid. I want to rebel. I don't care anymore. All right? And that rebellion is interesting. Because who are you rebelling against? All right? By the way, kind of, you see the whole culture, I mean, it's like, modern culture or Western culture, it's about rebellion. Rebel, 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 rebel. I mean, and you see it. But rebelling against whom? Against nature? You're rebelling against yourself, really. Yeah, you're right. You're rebelling against yourself, but you don't see it. Who are you rebelling against? Can you rebel against Allah Azza wa Jal? I don't care. I'm going to go and drink. What are you doing? Think, what are you doing? Like, if you have your mind with you, you'll understand that this is a deception from the shaitan, but I don't care. They've been telling me not to do this. I'm going to do it anyway. My parents can't control me. My teachers can't control me. The masjid can't control me. This can't control me. I'm going to do this. It's like, what are you winning when you do this? What are you liberating yourself from? Can you escape Allah Azza wa Jal? Allah Azza wa Jal, when He's telling you not to do things, it's because Allah wants to limit you? He wants to protect you. I don't care. Maybe your parents have not explained things well. Or maybe they did. Regardless, this is between you and Allah Azza wa Jal right now, if you know that Allah revealed it. You want to reject it. You're rejecting Allah Azza wa Jal. Can you rebel against Allah? Can you escape Allah? Can you oppose Allah Azza wa Jal? And again, go back to what we said about al-mutma'inna. Do you think that your choice is better than Allah's choice for you? Do you think that Allah's decree or Allah's command is worse than what you decide for yourself? Think about this rationally, common sense. And you understand that that rebellion that they are promoting is eventually, by the way, to control you. It is to control you. Because if you're not a slave to Allah Azza wa Jal, you're a slave to what? To the shaitan. To this world. And to those who have power in this world. So if you're a slave of Allah Azza wa Jal, He liberates you. And that is the true rebellion then, because you rebel against the shaitan and everybody else that is trying to help him. And the world that he has created. But if you run away from Allah Azza wa Jal, you run to the bosom of those who want to destroy you. And they will enslave you. They'll enslave you with lust, temptations, drugs, alcohol, commercials, consumption, political manipulation. You'll be a slave. So, Ibn al-Qayyim is saying, lust and anger, anger and lust. And he'll use both against you. And he'll marry them together. And he says, وَعْلَمُوا أَنَّهُ لَيْسَ فِي بَنِي آدَمَ. And he says, and know that there's no two weapons that are mightier among the children of Adam than those two weapons. The weapon of desires and the weapon of anger. He says, I've made their parents be expelled from Jannah because of desire. I took him out of Jannah because of desire. And I made their children kill each other because of anger. Right? فَبِهِ قُطِعَتْ أَرْحَامُهُمْ. Because of it, their family times were cut, and their blood were shed, and one of the children of Adam killed the other. He says, this is how I destroyed them. And he says, وَعْلَمُوا. And he says, know that anger is like a hot coal in the heart of the child of Adam, like a hot piece of coal in the heart of the child of Adam. And desire also is like a fire inflamed in his heart. And the thing that puts out fire is water and salah and Allah's remembrance and takbir. قَالَ فَإِيَّاكُمْ. He says, beware to let them, when they're angry or when they are controlled with desire, do not let them come close to salah or to wudu, because this will put out the fire of anger and the fire of temptation. And he says, وَقَدْ أَمَرَهُمْ نَبِيُّهُمْ بِذَلِكَ. And he said, their prophet had commanded them to do this. Now I'm going to read these hadiths, but these hadiths are weak, but nonetheless, they can be used. I'll tell you how. That hadith says, in al-ghadaba, he says, the anger is a hot coal in the heart of the child of Adam. Don't you see how his face gets red and his veins bulge? He says, if you experience this, make wudu. And he said, innama tutfa'u an-naru bil-ma. Water puts out fire. Now, وَقَدْ أَوْصَاهُمْ أَنْ يَسْتَعِينُوا عَلَيْكُمْ بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ. And he commanded you that they will seek the assistance of sabr and salah against you. So, Ibn al-Qayyim rahimahullah is trying to tell you, how do you deal with anger? Now, these two hadiths, as I said, they are weak, but you could use them nonetheless. Use them nonetheless. Meaning that when you become angry, use water. If you were able to go and make wudu, what does that do? It moves you or removes you from that spot of contention or anger and friction. It takes you away. And you're making wudu. And wudu is what? Wudu is ibadah. Right? So this is one thing that you can do to deal with anger. If you're a person who struggles with anger, and you say to yourself, how do I control it? Now the Prophet ﷺ told us about other things that we can do to control our anger. What are they? So he said alayhi salatu wasalam that if you're angry, I know that there's a statement that if you say, Allah will take that anger away. And what is that? A'udhu billahi minash shaitan ar-rajim. So I seek Allah's protection from the shaitan, accursed shaitan. Now, when you say it, once you may not feel an effect, keep repeating it. Especially repeating it with an understanding of what you are saying, because it is a supplication. You're asking, I seek Allah's protection. Yani, ya Allah, protect me. So remember this as you are saying it. Ya Allah, protect me from the shaitan. Ya Allah, protect me from the shaitan. And keep saying it. Right? So that's one thing. That's important to remember. The other thing that he said, alayhi salatu wasalam, that if you get angry and you are standing, then you sit. And if you are sitting, die down. So you're less prone to engage in an argument, physical or even verbal, when you make that movement, when you move like this. Standing, sitting, lying down. Don't you see that the person who is lying down, if they want to engage in an argument, what do? They sit. And if they're sitting, what do they want to do? They stand. Right? So the Prophet ﷺ, like in another context, when he's talking about the fitna in general, right? He said the one is walking better than the one who's running, and the one is standing better than, wallahu a'lam, yani, roughly that's the meaning. The one who is sitting is better than the one who's standing. In a fitna, the one who's kind of more eager to engage in it is worse, and the one who is less engaged in it is better. It's the same thing here, less engagement in it. So physically you would do this, verbally you would say that, and you could add to it that wudu, you could add to it also what? Removing yourself away from that spot and not saying a thing. Not saying a thing. Right? Until you're calm and you've thought about what you want to say. You really thought about it. And then you go ahead and you say whatever you want to say. And when you do that, you say to yourself, I can say whatever, whenever. But once it's out, you can't take it back. So better you think about it before you regret it. And how many people divorced their wives, left their husbands, destroyed their families, did things that they regretted because they decided in the moment that they want to talk. Right? And of course, you have to remember that whenever you decide to talk in the heat of the moment, who's right next to you? The shaitan. He says, I play with them at that moment. They're like a ball in my hand. I play with them in that moment. So if you want to close that door, you be quiet. And then you can talk later. And I remember someone saying once, I mean, for all of us who say that we cannot control our anger, right? They say, but there are times when you actually do control your anger. What happens when your boss yells at you? Do you punch him back? Or do you take it? Yes, boss. Yes, sir. Right? I'm not saying you're submissive like that. I'm just saying, I'm exaggerating. Why do you take it? Because you know that there's a hierarchy, right? And if I do this, if I say anything, the cost is too high. It's too high. So can you control your anger? Yeah, you can. So why is it that you can't control your anger with somebody else? Because then the cost is not high and you have power over them. You're not afraid. But the fact remains, you can when you want to. All of us, by the way, we can if we want to. It's just we kind of allow ourselves to progress and fight and listen to the shaitan when we're angry in some places, but not in other places. But if you always think about anger having a cost and you're supposed to think about it and model yourself after the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam and how he was, then you understand that you could be a better person and you could conquer this anger. So there's no excuse for someone to say, I'm just angry. No. And he continues that the strongest weapon that they have, as strong as you have against them, is, as he said, inattentiveness, ghafla, and following desire. And their strongest weapons against you is dhikrullahi wa mukhalafatul hawa, disobeying their desire and the remembrance of Allah. He says that is the greatest weapon that they have against you. So now you have a weapon. You know about it, but it's good to remember. Dhikrullahi azza wa jal. Dhikrullah. If you remember Allah and you stay away from your desire, you'll be strong. He says if you see a person who disobeys his desire, run away from his shadow. He says run away from his shadow, don't even come close to him. So he said, I want to tell you that they'll be aware of who is strong and who is weak. And the strong, they'll be afraid. To an extent, they'll be afraid, fearful of him. And he says, and kind of the summary, or what I want to get at, is that sins are, or is the weapon and the supply that you give to your enemy. And with that, you assist them against yourself. So they fight you with your own weapon. And you supply them with things that defeat you. And that is really an kind of a eloquent way of putting it. It's like, here's your enemy, and you're saying, here's the weapon, fight me. Here's this weapon, fight me. And who's the one who's giving it? You to them to fight you. You're opening the door, right? The enemy is, you know, camping outside, and it's a fortress, and all the doors are closed, and then you open the door, and you say, come in. Who's letting them in? He says, you're letting them in. You're supplying them. You're giving them a map of the territory for them to enter and then to take control of it. You're the one who's supplying all of it. قَالَ وَهَذَا غَايَةُ الْجَهْلِ. He says, this is extreme ignorance. And then he said, مَا يَبْلُغُ الْأَعْدَاءُ مِنْ جَاهِلٍ مَا يَبْلُغُ الْجَاهِلُ مِنْ نَفْسِهِ. He says, enemies will not be able to harm an ignorant person as much as an ignorant person is able to harm himself. Right? No one can harm you more than you harm yourself. And you are the one who lets your enemy in. And he says, وَمِنَ الْعَجَائِبِ. And maybe I'll just kind of translate this and come back to it later, inshallah. So just leave time for some questions. He says, and it's wondrous how a person will do his best to humiliate himself, and while claiming that he is trying to make it noble. Like, what he's doing, he thinks, I'm trying to make it noble and to garner and bring respect to it and to elevate it. But what he's doing is he's demeaning himself and he's belittling himself and he's diminishing himself through his acts. You think you're helping yourself and you're harming yourself. You're elevating yourself and actually you're demoting yourself by disobeying Allah Azza wa Jal and listening to the shaitan. You think you're doing yourself a service and in fact you are working against yourself. قال وكان بعض السلف يقول في خطبته. Some of the Salaf used to say in one of his khutbah, ألا رب مهين لنفسه وهو يزعم أنها لها مكرم. The same thing. Perhaps a person is humiliating himself while claiming that he is elevating it and he is honoring it. And he humiliates himself while thinking that he's bringing nobility to it. And diminishes himself while thinking that he's making it great. And he's wasting himself while thinking that he is taking care of it. Ajib, subhanAllah, this is incredible. You will not meet a person who says, yes, I'm working against myself. Everything that any person does, he says, it's for my own advantage, right? Every penny you spend is for my own advantage. But the perception is missing, the wisdom is missing. You're spending money against yourself. Ajib, right? You're spending time, like you have time, you spend it against yourself. You pay to harm yourself. But if we are a person to ask you, he says, no, of course, I'm taking care of myself, but you're not. Because the wisdom is absent, absolutely absent. You're not being guided by Allah Azza wa Jal. You're listening to someone else, to yourself, and you're listening to the shaitan. قَالُ وَكَفَ بِالْمَرْءِ جَهْلًا. It's enough ignorance for a person to be with his enemy against himself. Does more harm to it than any enemy can do to it. So that's what Ibn Qayyim rahimahullah wanted to say about how the shaitan kind of takes advantages of what we already have and turns us against ourselves. And he uses here ghafla and shahwa. and also uses ghadab, anger, and shahwa with them, and how he manipulates us with all of that. Khair, inshallah. Let me know, inshallah, if you have questions. I'll be happy to answer them, inshallah, before salat. Tafadhal. No, that's from me. I don't give it to him. That's from me. I'm the religious happy, not happy. That's my comment. Blame me for it. Okay, khalas. Challenge. Go ahead. Alhamdulillah. You want to say that in general, the religious people are happier? Alhamdulillah. No. Yeah. Keep drinking. Oh, okay. That's I agree with you. Naam, jazakallah khair. So, the comment is that that the sinners are not actually happy, right? But they're always struggling with the sin that they are doing, and that's true. I was trying to address a perception that some people have, right? Why is it that? But in reality, as I hope that I was able to convey, that it's not real, right? Allahu a'lam. Just quick question, is marijuana makruh or haram? What do you think? It's haram. Anything that makes you high, conceals your brain, takes it away from you, that is what? That's haram. Okay? Ma askara kathiruhu faqaliluhu haram. Whatever kind of askara, sakar is kind of to block the brain. So whatever does that, you know, even if, when it's a lot, even a little bit of it is haram. So marijuana is supposed to be haram. And we said before, you know, when we talked about it, that it does lead to serious consequences, right? Allahu a'lam. Yeah. Naam, jazakallah khair. So he's saying, you know, why would Ibn al-Qayyim rahimahullah include a hadith that is da'if in his book, even though he is knowledgeable in hadith? So there are several reasons why that may happen. First of all, an imam may consider a hadith to be authentic according to his research, but another doesn't. So that is always a possibility, right? That this imam considered it to be authentic based on his research or the criteria that he applied. But according to another imam, it isn't, right? So that's always a possibility. That's why you find kind of discrepancy between what they quote and how they quote it. The second is they do see some benefit in some of the weak hadith. So as long as that hadith is not incredibly weak, as long as it carries in it a meaning that they consider to be sound, that can be used, they say, okay, this can reinforce what I'm saying and it doesn't oppose it. So if a person can use, as I said, like I said, it is weak, but you can still use it because it does bring some benefit to you. So even if it turns out that this is not the statement of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, but a recommendation from some of the Sahaba, let's say, you'd say that okay, there's still some benefit in it. So they would put it there to kind of bring all everything and everything that is useful. And they say, here. They will not, of course, put anything that is fabricated, mawdu'. They will not put anything that is extremely weak. They will not put anything that may be weak but has wrong advice or wrong information in it. Then they will exclude all of that. Or if they put it, they'll tell you with the warning that, by the way, this is what is wrong with it. But otherwise, since there is benefit in it, they may still include it. Sahih, yeah, it would fall under that. Because this is not ahkam of how to pray and how to fast and how to give zakah, so there's some benefit in it. Wa bab at-targhib wa at-tarhib, so they say fine, they could be used. Wallah, tafadhali. Yes.
Yet he pairs in two areas. So one time he's pairing the shahwa with the ghafla.
Yes.
And then another time he's pairing the shahwa with the qadr.
Yes.
Why is that? And he seems to emphasize, always keep the shahwa being the dominant area that he could use.
No. So the question is, and I don't know if I can answer it now, inshallah, but at least the question is that Shaykh rahimahullah has paired shahwa with ghafla and also shahwa with ghadab, with anger, but not the third, you said not?
But he's always keeping
shahwa. So what is it that common element between them? And it is, wallahu a'lam, the common element because of its dominance, that everybody has this shahwa. And this shahwa is multifaceted, so it's not, you're not attracted to one thing, you're attracted to multiple things. So since it is very dominant, it is that link that is able to bring other elements, wallahu a'lam, Allah, other destructive elements, whether it is ghafla, to stray away from Allah Azza wa Jal, or anger, or anything else it may bring. So that is its dominance and its prevalence, and because it has multiple areas in it, I think that's the reason why he sees in it a link between those various ghafla and then ghadab at the same time. I think that's the dominance. Wallahu a'lam. But if I think of something else, I'll let you know. Tafadhal. That I am not sure of, right? And I mean, does shaitan have access to our hearts, or to our thoughts, to what we're thinking about? He may have, but at this point I'm not sure. Or he may have partial, or he may have indications, like with pulsing blood, or changes in your hormones and changes in your bodies, and so he may be aware of changes, biological changes in you that can indicate certain things. So, you know, the only thing that comes to mind at this moment is when Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he was suspecting whether Ibn Sayyad was a Dajjal or not, and he said to him, "Inni khabatu laka khib'a," he says, "I've hidden something for you." And Ibn Sayyad said, "Ad-dukh," right? And the Prophet had hidden ad-dukhan. And he was able to get that only, ad-dukh. So he said, "Ikhsa falan ta'du wa qadrak," you'll be humiliated, you will not exceed your station. So that is something the Prophet hid for him, yet through the shaitan he was able to get some, but not all. So the only thing that comes to mind, but I'm not sure, so at this point I do not know. Allah. hangover.
خير
إن شاء الله جزاك الله. طيب last question, so I don't want to take. عليكم السلام ورحمة الله. جزاك الله. Yeah, khair inshallah. So I think your second one is a question. The first one was a comment, right? So the first, the question is there a place where, or places where shaitan is less dominant and other places where the shaitan is more dominant? And the answer is definitely true. Yes. So a place, you could talk about a country, you could talk about a city, you could talk about a location that has greater sins and more sins will have that dominion of the shaitan. The shaitan will have more power and you'll feel less comfortable in it. You're more agitated, more disturbed because you're in it. Whereas if you compare it to a place that is blessed or a place that people are more obedient to Allah Azza wa Jal, and you find that there is greater sakina and tranquility and peace in it, you'll feel it when you enter. It's just a feeling. You cannot describe it, but it's a feeling that you will get, and there is less agitation, less discomfort, you're more at peace. So the houses of Allah Azza wa Jal are supposed to be like that. And Mecca and Medina are supposed to be like that. They're not inhabited by angels. When you go to visit Mecca and Medina, you're not entering Jannah. You'll find things that will upset you. But at the same time, it's better than many, many other places, right? Actually better than anything, any other place on earth. So there are places like that, and when you sense it, alhamdulillah, praise Allah Azza wa Jalla, that Allah Azza wa Jalla had awoken you so that you will be able to receive that. We'll stop here, inshaAllah. Barakallahu feekum. Subhanakallahu bihamdik. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. Alhamdulillah, rabbil alamin.